Welcome to the Rosetta Health Podcast Series. With the COVID-19 pandemic dominating the care arena these days, the role of health IT infrastructure has never been more important. And today we've assembled an esteemed panel of health IT experts to discuss this topic further. And our panel today includes Doug Fridsma, former president and CEO of the American Medical Informatics Association and former chief science officer at the ONC, Tim Pletcher, executive director at MyHIN, and Buff Kolchagov, CEO of Rosetta Health. And Doug, Tim, and Buff, how y'all doing today?
Terrific.
Good. Sheltering in place.
Good. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great to have you all here. And this is certainly a timely topic. And let's start at the top. And what is the role of health IT infrastructure in this crisis? And maybe we'll start with Doug first on that one.
Well, thanks. And thanks for inviting me to participate. You know, in a pandemic like this, in the crisis that we're facing, you know, health IT infrastructure couldn't be more critical. To be able to make policies, to be able to understand how to treat this disease, how to coordinate the response. All three of those things require data. And I think having this health IT infrastructure in place accelerates the ability for policymakers to make informed decisions. I think it will, as we learn more and more about how best to treat this, that we can disseminate that much more quickly. And I think there's a role for coordination of response with using this infrastructure to be able to help us guide clinical trials, understand what works and what doesn't, and to really help track the disease as it progresses.
Excellent. Tim, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think the infrastructure that we have in place is critical to being able to get information back out to the field. So being able to assemble it, get it to those in command, but then to sort of take those results and put it back in the hands of people on the front line is vital. If you just think about these field hospitals and these testing facilities that are springing up and they're not part of the normal infrastructure. And we have this in Detroit, being able to sort of quickly connect those pieces into the existing fabric that we have in place has been fundamental. We didn't have to reinvent new processes. We didn't have to, you know, start, oh, how are we going to do this? Which standard are we going to use? We were able to just flip a lot of things on, you know, in hours versus months and months. So I think it's been absolutely vital. And being able to use those existing channels to sort of communicate different information with a very high priority and urgency is making a difference.
That's great. Thanks for those insights there, Tim. Buff, anything else to add to this one?
Well, I would just leverage off of there too. You know, public health requires data and it requires accurate data. I don't think the public has been so aware of how important that is. You know, everybody's watching the news today and looking at some of the metrics, but you know, the accuracy and being able to have access to that is so important, and to be able to do that quickly because we haven't had a pandemic like this in, you know, at least 100 years or whatever. So, you know, the infrastructure wasn't purpose built for this. So what you're hoping is that the infrastructure is there that it can be utilized in new and unique ways quickly, which I think Tim was getting at. If you built a good infrastructure, you can do that. Otherwise, it would be, you know, it would be a mess. And I think we've got a lot of that going on right here, especially with this group.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and I was going to say both to Buff and to Tim, you know, one of the things that has also changed with some of the regulations that are coming out of CMS and the like is that what used to be a fringe element, the whole notion of telehealth and telemedicine, has become increasingly important as people are sheltering in place and we want to avoid the spread of infections and you want to triage people in their homes or apart from overburdening the health system. I'm not sure that you could have the sort of telehealth and telemedicine activities if you didn't have the existing health IT infrastructure as well. So I think that's another piece of the puzzle. And it goes to Tim's point. You know, you put up these field hospitals, they're not part of the usual kind of healthcare infrastructure, but you can easily integrate. I think the same is true of a lot of the telehealth and telemedicine activities. It's been waiting, and I think a lot of people have been reluctant to use it. But I think now, given the infrastructure that's there, both in terms of electronic health records, HIEs, and other ways of virtualizing the medical information, telemedicine and telehealth are increasingly becoming important ways to manage people in this pandemic.
That's yeah, I great. Couldn't underscore that more. You know, we've been doing a lot with telehealth and integrating the data to support telehealth activities. And so when many people think of telehealth or telemedicine, they think of the video conferencing component. Well, it's more the ability to remotely manage patients, to remotely interact in a meaningful way that offers a whole continuum of choices up to and including the video conferencing component. And I think you are seeing an acceleration of a lot of the consumer healthcare pieces of the puzzle that have been on the fringe, on the horizon. If you look at some of the 21st century cures rules that are really racing forward now because we need them. And that is going to, it's kind of a one-way path dependent activity where some of these changes aren't going to go backwards. People are going to continue to operate in these more efficient, more connected ways that take advantage of the existing infrastructure.
Great insights there. And do you all think the overall value of HIT infrastructure is really being proven, and also proving the value of the investment in that started in the HITECH Act? Did this all kind of lay that foundation? And we'll go with Doug to start with.
I think it's done two things. I think one is we have, over the course of the last 7 years or so, really expanded the use of information technology. And I think that's become sort of the fabric of how we treat patients and how we manage medical care and deliver that care. But I also think that one of the things that has happened is that this particular pandemic has probably also identified those parts of the puzzle that were not handled as well as part of HITECH. So, for example, one of the things about HITECH is that it had legislative and regulatory authority over electronic health records and providers. That's where the incentives went. But they didn't have authorization or authority to regulate or to standardize the way in which independent laboratory systems work. And so I think there's been some challenges among some of the HIEs and some of the other, you know, public health agencies in that while the standards do exist out there, they are not universally distributed. And I think as a result, you're having a lot more challenges with getting some of that data together. The other thing I would say is that public health has always struggled in this. It was challenging with HITECH to be able to incorporate the public health community. The good news is that biosurveillance standards for reporting things like influenza-like illnesses that were first deployed in New York City, but have been adopted in meaningful use and as part of the EHR technology, are able to give syndromic surveillance, which is helpful for identifying whether or not there's an outbreak. Some of the work that's coming out of New York had an abnormal spike in influenza-like illnesses that happened just before the pandemic really started to take hold in New York. The problem is that some other standards were not well adopted. So, for example, I'm sure that Buff and others know about some of these work, is that, you know, there was work to develop something called the structured data capture, which was a standard protocol that was one of the explicit use cases was in the event of a pandemic that we have to do case finding and case reporting. Is there a way that we could build that infrastructure into our existing electronic health records? Well, that standard exists, but it's not widely adopted. It didn't get incorporated in some of the regulations. And so we're left with a public health infrastructure that has shown regional excellence, in large part because of HIEs and others like that, but still lacks sort of that full national scope because we don't have universal standards that are helpful. We didn't include the laboratories in what we included in the regulations. And public health always struggles, I think, because of the lack of funding and the lack of support that they've had traditionally, not just in the last few years, but I think historically that's been true.
Great. Tim, anything to add to this one?
Yeah, I think he nailed it really well. And those are really astute observations that may not be obvious to folks. You know, the big national labs aren't always really well integrated. And there's a lot of extra effort right now to make that happen. The other comment is I would say that I'll call it the myth of the EHR, this idea that the entire universe revolves around the EHR is very important to doctors. But one of the things when we look at the public health mission and we look at the coordination with the community, you suddenly begin to realize there are a lot more actors who don't sit in front of an EHR that need to be included, need to have information, and need to be able to make sense. And this is the most important part, close the loop and give feedback back to the people who are using EHRs. And I think, as Doug said really well, there's evidence from, you know, what's happening on the ground that having that piece of the HIT infrastructure working would have been really nice.
Excellent. Doug or Buff, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'd like to take, I certainly agree with both Doug and Tim. I worked with Doug at ONC a long time ago, but you know, from the bottom up, we couldn't be doing what we're doing now without what happened in the High Tech Act. You know, if you look at the infrastructure and what's available for the infrastructure to do from a decade ago, you know, we can do that. Here's a couple of examples. So in one of the states that we support the state HIE, we have a feed of, you know, consolidated CDAs, which is something that came out of the High Tech Act, right? And that standardization of that documents, while not perfect by any means, it allows us to very quickly go in there and be able to look for different codes that are emerging and then send that on to, you know, public health places. So we couldn't have done that without some of the good standard work that ONC and what came out of the High Tech Act. There's still a ways to go. I think the other thing is we provide some services to CDC for one of the largest infection reporting networks that they have, which is usually done for blood infection reporting, superbugs and that. But of course, now with COVID, they're trying to reuse that network. Well, some of the standards that that's based on, while not specific to blood infection or superbugs, it really allowed CDC to get that up years ago. And now they're leveraging that to say, wait a second, now we got COVID, there's information that we didn't have before, right? That we didn't know we were going to need, like hospital capacity. How many, this is not normally stuff that CDC would capture for this, you know, how many ICU beds are available, how many respirators are available. So they're expanding that data set and using the same infrastructure to send it along. You know, this is, from my standpoint, this is why you have infrastructure. You don't exactly know what it's going to be used for, but investment in public health infrastructure and these other types of health IT infrastructure allow you to do these things very quickly. We've set up public health feeds, you know, within hours to get the required data to the facilities and the public health entities. So that's what's important. And that's what I really don't think we could have done it like this 10 years ago. I think it would have been a mess and would have taken a lot longer.
Excellent. Great insights there. And obviously COVID-19, the pandemic, it seems like obviously we knew about it a month ago. It's really taken hold rather quickly, as we all know, as we're all living through right now. But from your perspectives, what short and even long-term actions should be done in response to this? And maybe we'll start with Tim on this.
Well, a lot of the information that's flowing around needs to be saved because there's going to be a lot of retrospective analysis that needs to be done. And that from a public health perspective, certainly as we get ready for what many folks will believe sort of the next wave, we have a number of lessons learned to begin to gather. So in terms of, you know, rushing to get all the pieces put in place, if we know there's likely to be another wave, I think we're going to have to rush to make sure some of the gaps that we experience right now, are experiencing right now, get filled as we go into the fall. And so a lot of the things that were put forward in 21st Century Cures that came out as final rules, probably instead of slowing down, actually need to accelerate just to sort of continue to advance the availability of information. Because I think it's going to be even more critical as we go forward. As we mentioned earlier, I think some of the consumer health things that we've been talking about for at least as long as I've been in the profession are starting to happen. And we're going to see a lot more consumers, a lot more interested in what traditionally we haven't had a consumer market for folks. So I think we're going to see more and more of that staying with us and accelerating as we go in the next 18 months even.
Right. Thanks, Tim. Doug, anything to add on that one?
Well, I think, you know, we talk about short-term and long-term actions. I think in the short term, we can't let perfect be the enemy of good. And that means that we aren't going to have time to develop perfect feeds or to develop resilient standards or figure out exactly how to do this in a perfect way. To me, free text is better than no text. And so we really have to figure out how we can make sure that the information is flowing to the people that need to make decisions, and let very, very smart people kind of take what we give them and make it better by, you know, doing natural language processing or extracting information that's relevant and things like that. I think we have to also be very careful that in the short term, we're going to have to make some compromises. There are kind of HIPAA relaxation rules that are in place that are supposed to help the free flow of information and prevent barriers from occurring. I think there's also some talk about, well, can't we just develop giant databases where we centralize all of that? And while that may be good in the short term, I think long term, those are not necessarily the directions that we need to go. there are other ways that we can say have more distributed systems in which there's a certain autonomy for the healthcare providers and for the patients. I think there are ways that we can learn from this experience and then figure out how best to create additional infrastructure or additional use cases that can help support this next phase, if you will. But I think one of the things that just is remarkable to me, and it kind of goes a little bit to Tim's comments as well, is that, you know, for years, many of the companies complained about how difficult it was to adopt standards and how difficult it was to standardize and what a incredible cost and burden this was. And that the feedback that you get is that we simply need to delay. It's too hard. It's too complicated. We can't do it now. But what I'm seeing is I'm seeing some of the big vendors starting to really work in double time to provide public health data to support COVID cases. There are barriers that are being dropped in response to this. And it makes you wonder, why was this not possible before? And why did we not see the opportunity before to be able to expand and to grow the kind of information flow that's out there? So I really think that we don't want perfect to be the enemy of good in the short term. We have to be careful about the decisions we make now so that we don't create downstream problems. Buffel will recognize that we want to take a path of least regret. We don't create problems that are going to come back to bite us in the long term. And I think ultimately, as more data comes from sources not familiar with the EMR, I'll put a plus up to what Tim said about the consumer. I think increasingly that's going to be an important aspect. And hopefully what's happened in the course of the last couple of months will just accelerate that migration, if you will, to understanding the value of other data sources, not just the EHR.
Excellent. Thanks, Doug. Buff, anything to add to that one?
Well, I would just say I can't see the long term here. I think there's a fog of war right here. I mean, I think the short term lesson is for us is, you know, information is so valuable in a fog of war. Run the lines, run them through the trenches, get the data flowing. And then, you know, obviously after the battle has settled down, we can figure out the best standards and the best way to do it. But some of us who have been in health IT infrastructure for a while, some of these connections can take, you know, months. Sometimes people complain about years. You need to get the information where it's needed in, you know, in hours and days, but hours would be better. That's a lesson. We need that capability. You know, some of that capability is there, but when you're, who was it who said, I can't remember which famous general said, you know, basically your plan goes to pot once the, you know, once the fighting starts. You know, you come up with all these plans, but then in the heat of the battle, you got to have the flexibility to get there. That's what we're seeing as a real advantage right now.
Outstanding. You know, this has been a great podcast and lots of awesome insights here, especially during this challenging time. And I'm going to go down the line here for just last parting shots. Anything else to add question here? And let's start with Tim. Any parting shot?
No, I think the key lesson learned is we are on the right track. And this interoperability mission, it has the value everybody has said it needs to have and will have. So, you know, time to go faster.
Excellent. Doug, any last word?
I have two comments. One is information technology now is a required resource. It's not just a nice to have. It's an absolute important thing. We see that just with the need for internet access for kids and for doctors and for, you know, just the society in general. So I don't think we're going to be able to back away from that. But the final thing I'll say is that in all of these activities, one of the things that's going to be really important is for us to pay attention to the small primary care practices in rural areas and in places that are somewhat underserved. There's a lot of attention paid to the big cities where the outbreaks are particularly bad. But my sister is a primary care doctor in Bain, Michigan. So it's Cadillac is the big city. And she has a clinic that the community built for her. On one end of the street is the school, and on the other end of the street is the nursing home. And she's gone entirely virtual in her clinic in response to this. They're not seeing patients any longer in house because just they're worried about the spread of infection. They're moving to virtual telehealth and things like that. But this is going to be a tremendous burden for them. And I think we have to understand as we deploy health information technology infrastructure that we don't create have and have nots. We have to make sure that we pay attention to the people that are out there on the front lines with this as well.
Thanks, Doug. Buff, any last words?
Yeah, I can't remember who, whether it was Doug or Tim said, but the whole, I mean, there was sort of this you know, from our perspective, some of this, the EHR is the data center of the world, and the EHR is great, but it can only do so much. So I hope after the, you know, pandemic passes and that we continue to invest in population health and public health. I think that's so important. That's not something that, you know, from any one point you can get all the data and you can do what you need to do. So it's, you know, the United States has a mixed history of, you know, investing in infrastructure after the urgency is over with. And I just hope that we, you know, that this continues on, and knowing that this capability is critical to the, you know, safety and well-being of the United States and its citizens.
That's perfect. What a great way to end this Rosetta Health podcast interview, where we spoke with Doug Fridsma, former president and CEO of the American Medical Informatics Association. He was also a former chief science officer at ONC. Tim Pletcher, executive director of MyHIN, and Buff Kolchogov, CEO of Rosetta Health. And as you heard, these three health IT experts were kind enough to share their insights in the role of health IT infrastructure in the face of today's COVID-19 pandemic. And Doug, Tim, and Buff, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.